I'm working on this certain title, and that's a few sermons will be coming from Philippians. That wasn't really my plan, but the more I got thinking, the more I said, no, I can't do justice to this without several sermons. So anyway, to spare you from one real long sermon, I want to look at this first. Now, a couple of the phrases that jumped, things that jumped out in the reading that we just heard from Philippians. The one was the word joy, making my prayer with joy. And in working on, reflecting on that, it turns out that Paul uses the word joy 11 times in the letter to the Philippians. And that's kind of a unique thing. And so that got me thinking more about, okay, what is the story with Philippians? And when we look at it in Acts chapter 16 to be particular, Paul has this missionary journey. He gets this call to Macedonia. And Macedonia is sort of there in the strait there between what's called Asia in ancient times and Greece, but it's where modern day Croatia, now you can think of all the different kind of Czechoslovakia, I should say, and that stretch on the side of the sea there. And Paul, as I looked at that and thought about that passage, in chapter 16, Paul is in prison because of exposing this or casting out a spirit in this woman who was a prophetess. And she was causing trouble, impeding Paul from really sharing the gospel. So Paul intended for silence. And so we get here where Paul cries out in a loud voice, "Do not harm yourself, we are all here." But I mean, he's in jail, and then there's the passage where they escape from the jail, or the doors are open because of an earthquake. The doors are open, and the jailer wakes up and is afraid that everybody's going to be gone, and they don't leave. So the next day, Paul and Silas are out, and the Sabbath comes, and they take a walk looking for water, a river, and assuming that there will be worshipers there. And as he goes, he runs into Lydia. And Lydia is a maker of purple cloth. And we've read this story further recently. But Paul talks to Lydia, and she says, "If you accept me and my testimony of belief in Jesus, then you must come stay with me." And so Paul and Silas go and stay with her for a while, her household, which is a large household. And it's out of that that the church, the congregation, grows. And so Paul not only was part of the starting of this congregation, but he was the stayed with them for a while. And that got me thinking that, you know, in the first part, I had misconceptions about Paul. I always understood him. I never really understood him as strong and relational. I experienced him as basically the Romans, the book of Romans, and, you know, a law person, but not at all a strong and relational person. And I understood him as, or different passages about him really affirming the community and trying to strengthen the community and so forth. But I was blind to all kinds of things in his teaching, in his understanding of scripture. And this passage really, really strikes me because of that. First of all, Paul is up there. His home, Tarsus, is partly down the coast, the Mediterranean. And it's about two-thirds of the way to Jerusalem. Tarsus is there, and then you go out further around the coast, along the coast towards Turkey now, and you get into where we find Philippi. And that got me thinking, you know, Paul was part of the diaspora that we spoke of. But the diaspora that we spoke of on Pentecost, that group immigrated 600 years earlier, right? They spread out all over the place. And so Paul's Bible, Paul's Old Testament was the Septuagint. And the Septuagint was, anybody know? The Septuagint was what? So it means 70. But what is it? It's the Greek Hebrew Bible. So it's called the Septuagint. I can look this up, and it's called that because there were 70 people who met together and they were unanimous on the translation. So it's this the group of 70 who translated it to Greek. So anyway, that was Paul's time. But Paul, you know, was interested in theology and so forth. And so as I started to look more into the Tarsus was really very much like Alexandria in Egypt. And Alexandria was the home of one of the world's biggest, well, the world's greatest library back at this time in history. And anyway, it's a center for intellectuals and so forth. So Paul grew up in this context of being a stranger, like knowing, identifying himself as a Jew, but he's living not in an occupied territory, although it is occupied by the Romans, but he already was a stranger. So it's not like this was his homeland. So it's a different kind of occupation. And Philippi was actually a colony in the Roman Empire. And they sent, just like they did in Corinth and other places, they colonized it with retired army people. So there are retired military. This is the city. It's already an ancient city. It already has a philosophical tradition and so on and so forth. But Paul is growing up in this and is very much integrated in that. In Tarsus, he gets to Philippi and he recognizes much of the same culture as what he grew up in Tarsus. It's on the Mediterranean. So it's similar foods, it's similar near the water. Tarsus was only 10 10 kilometers or so from the Mediterranean. Same thing when you get up to Philippi, it's not all that far. But it's a culture that he recognized quite well. It got me thinking about Paul being a cross-cultural bridge. Now, years ago, I lived with an engineer. This was in the late 70s. And we were in France, and he was an engineer. And he was fascinated by bridges. And we were walking along the Seine just below the Notre Dame, the cathedral. It was just in sight there. And all of a sudden, he disappeared. And we were walking, and I didn't notice for a little bit. And then I realized, where did he go? And I started looking, and he had crawled up the, you know how the slope is there under a bridge often. He crawled up there and crawled out on one of the pillars and said, he said, this is amazing. The weight of this entire structure is on a number of small points. You're nodding, Chris. Why would that be the case? Well, steel expands, right? There's movement. It's got to move back and forth. But the thing that struck me is, one, that he would be so curious, he wanted to crawl up there and actually look at it. But at the same time, it's fascinating that massive structure could be resting upon a whole series of small points. I would think it would be massively anchored in another way, but the weight-bearing part of it was really fairly focused, quite focused. The analogy in that for me is that in the story of Paul, we see that one person who came in and understood a certain number of things became a cross-cultural bridge that united people. He gets to his divided wall of hostility and so forth, that Paul was key in breaking down all kinds of cross-cultural barriers. Now, let's look at the passage there a bit, because there are a number of things in this actual passage that I think help us understand what is our calling in this context. So he says, I thank God in all my remembrances of you, always in every prayer of mine, for you all, making my prayer, so always in every prayer of mine for you all, making my prayer with joy. Because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, and I'm sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. So what Paul does, and what resonates with that song, that first song, 16, is that Paul says that we have this relationship, we have this partnership, he does with the Philippians. And that relationship is one that brings him great joy, but it's not his doing, it's God's doing. And his confidence isn't in his continued journey with them, Although he keeps, as we'll see in the next four chapters, he keeps a strong relationship. It's a back and forth relationship that goes on for the next decades. And Paul says, though, that it's God who will complete this. So Paul's confidence is not in his own ability to walk with them. His confidence is in that God, the one who started this, will carry it to completion. I think so very often we get stuck with our own ability to accomplish things. I'm doing a little project at home, a tiny minuscule project. But it's in a space a little wider than this and 20 inches deep. And I'm putting in some shelves. And working from the low end, by the time I got finished putting in the braces on the wall, I could hardly get back up. I was, you know, and I could screw it in like normally on two sides, but this side I had to do it with my left hand, and I had more difficulty getting connected with the screws and so on and so forth. And of course, that wore me out more and more. And what I thought would be a few minute project ended up being very frustrating and a few different take it out, put it back in, clean it up. It was terrible. Well, not terrible. The outcome's fine. But for many moments, I had to stop and say, Steve, settle down, get out of here, and give it a pause and come back to it, because you're obviously getting too frustrated. So anyway, it would have been good had I been able to say out of confidence that Steve, this is God's project, not yours. But I couldn't, you know, it was my project. It was one of the things I identified the very first visit to the house. I thought, this is God called me. I have to make better use of this space. But it's taken me 5 years to get there, partly because of the dimensions of the place and so forth. I couldn't imagine how I could get to start. Anyway, what Paul does though is he's in this foreign land that he recognizes very clearly as very similar to Tarsus. He's got shared language because of the Greeks and the Roman occupation and so forth. There are a whole lot of shared culture things, but he is bringing them to faith and new understanding of who God is. And the thing is, though, he also knows that it's not about him. He says this is God's project, and because it's God's project, God will bring it to completion. So it's God's project in a number of different ways. One is it's God who called him to go to Macedonia. And so that wasn't part of his agenda, his own agenda. He was still sorting things out with Jerusalem and with this new Christian movement. He's still working on some of those issues. But he gets this call, this prompting from God to go on being called to Macedonia, and he sets out on his journey. And he makes many stops along the way, but when he gets to Philippi, he has this special connection. He has a similar connection with Ephesus and Corinth later on and so forth, but in Philippi in particular, it's really the first place where he's the one who is really actively planting this church. So, Paul and talks about his joy. He talks about prayer, his relationship in prayer, and his absolute confidence. But what is he confident about? He's confident in their partnership with him in the gospel. And so Paul is pointing out that their unity, their walking together, is in shared convictions about who Christ is and what Christ calls us to and what Christ is doing in and through the church. So he says, that he already reiterates in verse 12, I want you to know, brothers, that what happened to me is really sort of counting me in terms of being in jail, because this is, he did have a time in jail in Philippi, but now it's thought that he's in jail in Rome. And here he says, though, that I'm here in jail and I may be suffering, but my suffering is really a sharing in Christ's suffering. And theologically, that becomes kind of difficult for some of us, in that you know, we theologians basically say that Jesus' work in salvation is complete. Well, I say, well, then how does Paul participating in suffering Christ really, how does that work? If Jesus' suffering is, or Jesus' work is complete in salvation, why is it that we are called to suffer alongside of Christ? So there's some theological questions in my mind. But anyway, he says, what has happened to me, this is verse 12, has really served to advance the gospel so that this has become known throughout the whole imperial guard. In other words, all the guards there in the prison are recognizing that there's something that's taking place in this man. And his imprisonment is actually a testimony to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. So when you think about that, this is only 30 years or so after the death and resurrection of Jesus. And Paul is in prison now. He hasn't been threatened with death. We don't know exactly why he's in prison at this time. But what he is recognizing is that God is using his imprisonment, and that his imprisonment is actually an accompaniment of Jesus and his suffering. So he's saying that he uses this term partnership. My partnership with you in the gospel. What does he mean by that term? In looking at it, it seems that what becomes most clear is that his partnership is not simply a worried partner, like in a business or something like that. No, his partnership is one of, we are united in the life and work of Jesus, in his suffering and death, and his resurrection. That's where Paul identifies the partnership in their relationship. And that partnership is expressed not only in the church and in the work of the church, but it's also expressed by their financial gifts and contributions to Paul's ministry, and also to their concern for his well-being. So he's writing this letter out of gratitude for their partnership in the gospel as an ongoing journey and relationship with them. The point, though, that I wanted to focus on here for a few moments is that when he concludes this section of prayer, he says, and it is my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve what is excellent. When I read that, it just struck me about how we as a congregation here think about the next 10 years, the next 20 years. MCUS is putting out, I'm not sure whether it's 2050 or something like that, but they're, how do we position ourselves for 20 years from now? And in reading some of those articles, it just made me think about this. You know, the discernment we need to make over the next years is just that. How do we position ourselves for what will be the situation here in Newport News in 20 years from now? How do we make use of this facility? We've done a reworking of things, and even though the screen stopped functioning after only just over a year and so on and so forth, things do fall apart. But at the same time, we believe, I think we can be, it can be confirmed in us that God has walked with us in renovating this building. I think this was not a mistake. I think this was a divine leading to do what's been done here. And it hasn't been without obstacle, and will continue to be with obstacles. But it's not, in a sense, it's our involvement, but it's God's project. So there's a sense in which we have to discern together what do we need to look like over the next decade or two decades. And Paul's encouragement in here is that he says that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and discernment. So walking with Jesus, part of our monitoring of how we are doing is, are we increasing in love? How do we, and I would say we are. Why do I say we are? Well, because I hear in our Sunday school this morning testimonies about people within the community, people who left and so on and so forth, that we still love and honor and cherish. And we respond, they come to people in the church for assistance when they have need, and they're available. So our love, we have indicators that our love is having an impact within the community. We're growing in knowledge through our challenges as well, in that I think the congregation, there's a sense in which for many years, the physical place and a physical, like the identity of the calling has been prominent through the history of this church. But that's getting less and less. I mean, even though we have roads called Colony and so on and so forth, the identity of the calling one is less and less. And so how does that impact how we see our ministry? Because it used to be focused on calling, and that's all slowly but surely changing. And the relationship with the school, I think, can be one indicator as to how we move forward. But we take time and we think about it and we say, Lord, help us to know how to love this community more through the gifts that you have given us. Through the space, through this community, and through our knowledge of God's love. So our discernment needs to be about how we demonstrate the love of God in this place and in this time. And I think that we must take comfort in the fact that it's God's project and not just our project. We can discern because God will lead us. I think the main thing I get out of this whole passage is that God is the one doing this. When we take it on and sort of believe and act as though we're the ones who are doing these things, and it all counts on us, then we get bogged down. But what we need to say is this is how God is working God's purposes out, and how do we best accompany God in this project?